Good morning. You've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week here on Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm joined this morning by Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. And how are you this beautiful day?
It is a beautiful day, and so I'm well.
Yeah.
It's very nice outside.
Yeah. Yeah. It sure is. Sunny, yeah. Cool, but springtime. Things are starting to green up.
It is. Yes. I'm considering mowing the lawn tomorrow before the rain arrives.
We're looking at rain on Saturday, actually.
Yeah.
You might be too late for that.
I know. Maybe if I do it in the morning. I don't know. Anyway. That's my weekend plans. We're also here in the studio with Jack Freeman from the Bonner County Daily Bee. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Oh, you're on microphone number 4, not number 3. Here we go. Try that.
Good morning, part 2.
There he is. Jack Freeman, who covers the city and the education beat for the Bonner County Daily Bee. Let's get right to the headlines. Here's one from the National Affairs Desk. The Trump administration sued Idaho's top election official, Phil McGrane, the Idaho Secretary of State, after McGrane declined to give the federal government access to sensitive personal information about 1 million Idaho registered voters. The Justice Department sued the Secretary of State last week and asked a federal judge to force him to turn over the full voter data, which includes partial Social Security numbers and driver's license numbers. The lawsuit marks the Justice Department's 30th lawsuit against states for failing to comply with its demands for voter data. McGrane is running for re-election and is running unopposed in the Republican primary. In state news, as we know, the Idaho legislature adjourned April 2nd on Wednesday and just announced yesterday on Thursday, Governor Brad Little vetoed 5 bills that were passed late in the session to the surprise of many in the legislature. These are the first vetoes he has issued thus far this year, and also more vetoes at 5 than he has issued in any single year of his tenure as governor. Little is now in his 8th year. Even though he vetoed 5 bills on Wednesday, he has not yet acted on all of the late session bills passed by the Idaho legislature. He has until 5 p.m. Tuesday to act on the remaining bills. The bills he has yet to act upon include House Bill 822, requiring teachers and doctors to out transgender minors to their parents or face lawsuits. House Bill 913, which would adopt Medicaid expansion work requirements, part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The Idaho bill would require state health officials to verify work history for Medicare enrollees over a period of 3 months. And then House Bill 516, a bill that was overhauled in amendments, didn't pass through the usual committee structure and ended up banning, would ban school districts from, quote, using public payroll systems to collect union dues, increasing teacher salaries to cover union dues, or giving teachers paid time off for union activities, as reported by the Idaho Education News. Little can sign any of these bills, veto them, or he can take no action and allow them to pass into law without his signature. And he has until Tuesday to determine what he'll do with those bills. The bills that he vetoed were mostly budgetary, but the legislature has no recourse because they have adjourned for the year. House Speaker Mike Moyle expressed surprise at this and said that had they known that, I'm paraphrasing here, that had they known that these vetoes were coming, they would not have adjourned for the year but would have remained in session, and he intends to remain in session for the additional time next year if he is Speaker again.
Mm-hmm. A bit of a chess match.
It is, and it's hard to know who exactly is really surprised. I think you'll have to use your own best judgment. Who's surprised by this? Who's kind of breathing a sigh of relief that they don't have these bills don't have to go into effect? I'm I'm not sure.
As you mentioned, they're kind of housekeeping bills, five that he's vetoed so far.
Yeah.
The ones you mentioned that are more controversial will be interesting
to see. Those are coming up, yeah. And maybe we'll do a little kind of state legislature recap of some kind next week once all the dust is settled. But, yeah, we're still waiting to see what does go into effect. Let's talk about geographical features, like the lake. The surface level of the lake is currently observed at 2,054 feet and 3/4 at Hope, and is projected to come up 1 foot over the course of the next week. So that lake level is coming up for the spring, looking for, I think summer pool is 65, right? Or I think we're still about 10 feet short, or 62 and a half. Okay. Yeah. So we are, I guess, we're less than 10 feet short. We're only about 7 feet. We will be only about 7 feet down by the end of next week. The county postponed their next business meeting their scheduled meeting for this week due to conflicting schedules. So no meeting this week. But there is some county news in that Panhandle Bike Ranch down in Sagal was recognized by the IRS as a 501c3 nonprofit. We'll have to talk to Sansari Mitchell at some point, who's been covering this story in the Reader for as many months as it's been kind of unfolding. But this changes their status, and their initial CUP, conditional use permit, was to build restrooms and a kind of a changing facility on their property that was denied by the county. They will not be resubmitting a building location permit at this time. They filed a petition for legal review of the land use designation decision in January, and litigation is ongoing. So they're going to continue their legal challenge for the time being. They're classified now as they are seeking to be classified as a park under Bonner County Code, rather than as a, what were they before? I think they were
recreational
facility, and now they are seeking to be classified as a park. Let's see. Schweitzer closed for the winter on April 5th. Speaking of recreation, did you make it up last weekend, Chris?
I did. I had my woeful year, but I had the best ski day of the year. Beautiful, sunny spring skiing on Saturday.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I didn't go at all. And Jack, you're not a skier either?
Not yet.
Did you venture up the mountain at all?
No, not yet. I'm waiting to do so.
Yeah. They're open in the summer. Get the nice views.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's
exactly. Cool. And great hikes and do a chairlift ride and take your bike and do some mountain biking. All good up there.
Yeah. Let's see. In the city of Ponderay, where's that? Where's that page? The Black Rock cleanup project on the Ponderay Bay Trail is set to begin. That is, let's see, the city of Ponderay kicked off the project on April 7th when crews began construction to remediate contamination at the Black Rock site on the shoreline of the Ponderay Bay Trail. That long-awaited is right. I think there's been, you know, signage advertising that as a toxic site where you shouldn't allow your children to, you know, play with the dirt or anything like that for as long as there has been a Ponderay Bay Trail. So
the actual Black Rock itself is a slag pile.
Yeah, it's not a rock.
It's not actually a rock, although it's very rock-like in appearance. But it's they don't intend to remove the Black Rock. They intend to cap that, but they have to do a lot of cleanup of the soils, I think. That's what this is about.
Yes.
Jack, you wrote about that. And we'll talk more about that a little bit. Yeah. And then in the city of Sandpoint, the parking plan will be implemented this summer. Kiosks installed by the end of June. No fee schedule set yet for violations. City residents can purchase a parking pass that includes, well, free. I guess not free, but for the cost of that pass, you get to park without additional payment at city lots for $15 if you're a city resident. County residents can purchase $15 that.
For the whole year.
Correct. Good point. For the year, not for just the day or anything. County residents can purchase the same pass for $30. In the city of Sandpoint on April 1st at the city council meeting, there was a presentation on downtown revitalization phase 3. And the story, dated April 4th by Jack Freeman, discusses the details of that design. This was approved 6-0 by the council, and unanimously approved the basis of the design. And we have not really talked about the details of it yet, but you have them here in your piece, including a little graphical description, which folks will have to find your paper or go online to see because they can't hear it over the radio. But should we start there? Talk about what happened at that April 1st meeting. There was a presentation on the details of what we can expect, what kind of changes we can expect coming to the downtown area. I don't know. Anything right off the bat? Anything jump out at you? Anything really surprise you about what you saw in those? In those plans?
Yeah, thanks, Jack. Nothing mm-hmm. really surprised me. A lot of the recommendations that the city's design group, Welch Comer, was making were on display at the city's open house, which I attended in the middle of March. That's kind of where they had this layout, and they were showing it off and talking to people through it. So I got the chance to speak with city staff and one of the engineers there who kind of walked me through that design. So there really weren't any surprises for me. I think the one that people will be most interested in and that stands out to me is the raised intersection that's, mm-hmm. that is was really the only topic that the council was like, I'm really not sure about. That would run from Church Street to Pine Street on First Avenue. And this would be kind of an abrupt, kind of like speed table that would raise up the street and then eventually lower it back down as you kind of continued on First mm-hmm. Avenue. And the goal of this is to really calm traffic and get people to slow down in that high pedestrian area. I think people will have a lot to say about that because it is kind of a shift from what we see in downtowns usually. You know, you don't see those kind of, you know, maybe there are speed tables, but it's not raised and things like that. And the other thing that stood out to me that I think a lot of people will really like is the seasonal left turn restriction from Bridge Street onto First Avenue. So there'll be some kind of way for them to restrict when you can turn left, or I believe you can't turn left. It's illegal. It's illegal all year long,
but people do it.
But people do it. And so this would be kind of implementing that so that you aren't getting those traffic jams where people do try to do it with a boat or an RV and then they get stuck. And, you know, these things happen kind of in the downtown core. So just those are the two things that stand out to me for people that people are really going to notice. Off the bat when it comes to the changes in the streetscape.
Yeah. So describe this raised thing. So the whole, that whole block is going to be lifted up or just some couple of speed tables?
It's going to be lifted up. So it's going to be kind of like a speed table entering, as I understand it. They kind of designed it. They're going to design it to be a little abrupt so that you know that you're on a raised intersection and it would come up to the sidewalk. So there should be, there will be, I believe, a planter strip separating the pedestrians and the cars kind of in the less than 30% design that they have right now. But that street would come up to where the sidewalk is kind of at that level and then drop down once you're over that part. And it's something that Welch Comber says has been used a lot in Europe. And it does get drivers to slow down and kind of give pedestrians that more right of way back, because drivers know they kind of feel the abruptness and they know there's going to be a lot of pedestrians here. They're going to be kind of roaming. Maybe I should slow down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you feel that that change. I mean, I guess I can picture it as a driver when you're up and the pedestrians are on the same level as you. You do kind of feel, obviously you're higher, but somehow the effect is that they're, you know, the pedestrians being closer to you, you feel kind of squeezed in. I don't know. But that would be, yeah, run for the whole block, really slowing traffic down there. I noticed no roundabout in the depiction. I think that was something that has come up once or twice as an idea at the end of...
Well, that's more at the end of Superior.
There you go.
Yeah. Where Superior down. Is.
And yeah. That's not included in the third phase. Yeah. That could be a potential fourth phase if they find the funding for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be way down basically at the end of 95.
Yeah, kind of where you enter town.
Yeah, basically, coming into town. But at the end of Bridge Street, where we're coming out of City Beach or going into City Beach, that Bridge Street Road, there's nothing there other than a change in the left turn legality, I guess.
Not legality, just kind of more enforcement or trying to find ways to stop people from doing that.
I think they're going to use bollards there, and they're going to be there apparently seasonally. So you would have to, you know, if you're trying to turn a left, you'd have to drive over this obstruction. So
yes. Yeah. They don't know kind of what that looks like quite yet. That's just, you know, this is the basis of design. So they'll take this and then they'll progress to a 30% design and then continue actually working through what are the materials going to look like. You know, is the raised intersection going to be a different material to let drivers know? Are we going to have this, how everything's really going to look and the materials that they'll use a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But they know that they want a seasonal left turn restriction there.
Do you know if the city, I mean, this is a little outside of your purview, but does the city have a preferred route for southbound traffic leaving that area? I guess I'm thinking if, you know, somebody coming up from Spokane with their boat, they're going back down 95 or Coeur d'Alene with their boat or something like that. Are they would prefer that they go do that immediate left or right left onto Church, or do they prefer that they kind of circle around the downtown, or I don't know.
I don't know the ideal scenario for that. Either. I think the idea more so is to just make sure that they're not stopping traffic.
Yeah.
Maybe they do the right and left onto Church and get out, or maybe they loop around Cedar. But I think the goal there is just to make sure that they don't end up completely stopping traffic in the busy season with doing something that is illegal, and they don't have the manpower to really stop.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, you know, my question is sort of, you know, you move that left turn that somebody's trying to take, you move it about 50 feet down the road, and it does alleviate certainly some of the traffic concerns, but there still tends to be in the summertime a backup of cars trying to take that immediate left onto Church Street. And I guess I wonder if they try to, if there's a way of changing that traffic.
It's kind of problematic
because
if the only option would be to continue on down to, Main What's Street,
Main or Oak, or there,
and make your turn there. But then you're entering the really congested downtown with lots of pedestrians. So I don't know if there's the preference is that there's just not so much traffic.
that would be ideal. Which and maybe the new parking implementation will have some positive effects on that. Okay. Well, the big change then, the speed table, an addition of more greenery, I think.
Yes, definitely more trees. That was something everybody I talked to at the open house said they wanted more street trees, more green in their downtown. So,
okay.
And do you know the status of the widening of the sidewalk there along Bridge Street? Is that's underway?
It should be ongoing.
Yeah,
yes, they're working on it probably right now as we talk about it.
I think they're trying to have that done well in advance of actually Lost in the 50s, I think, if I recall correctly.
I believe so, somewhere around the kind of that start of the summer season.
Yeah, so that's going to widen the sidewalk there on the north side of Bridge Street up quite a bit, mm-hmm. make it a better, safer pedestrian way there.
And last thing that I can touch on for pedestrians is they're going to kind of shorten or reduce the corner radii or the radius of some of the corners, which will shorten the crosswalks in downtown, which I know is mm-hmm. Very much needed as a pedestrian who walked quite a bit here in the summer. Some of those crosswalks, mm-hmm. especially by church on First, are just a nightmare. It seems like pedestrians either pop out when you're driving, or as a pedestrian, they feel like you're invisible sometimes. So that's something that they're looking at, and I think is a very welcome change.
You're saying they're going to use more bulb outs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They bring it out.
One thing on the picture of that intersection, they show bulb outs on Church that restrict it so much. If somebody was trying to pull a trailer. Make that left turn onto Church, pulling a trailer, and there's another car stopped going, towards the city beach. It looks like there wouldn't be enough room there. So it might just be the way it's depicted in the illustration.
Yeah.
But that could be a hang up if they make it too narrow.
Mm-hmm. I think they'll be having a lot of those conversations as they move forward in this design process, because it's not set to begin construction really until after the summer season, so still a lot of time to discuss this and what it will actually look like.
Yeah, that's an important point. The construction on this didn't start till September.
I think that's their target.
Mm-hmm. But everybody pretty much united on city council, which is not always the case with our new city council here in 2026. It was a unanimous decision to follow through with this plan. A little discussion, I guess, of the speed table, how that would work, but they were convinced that the full raised speed table is a good idea. In light of, I think it was the emergency services in particular, where having a series of speed tables is problematic for them rather than the one raised speed table.
I think the designers have really, they've taken the public feedback a lot, and they did get a lot of public feedback and translated them into this design. If I think about the things that city council really focuses on when you're talking streets, it's traffic calming. Some of them care about getting more greenery. Some of them want ped bike stuff. And this was all kind of incorporated in this design. So I think that made it easy for them to approve the basis of design. Because it really did play into the things that they're always talking about and they're always pushing for.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the other city business, and not City of Sandpoint business, but City of Ponderay business. We touched on this last time you were in the studio, a couple weeks ago, Jack. But at the time, I don't think there were... It was brand new and there weren't many details, but we know a little bit more now. What can you tell us about the Black Rock remediation project that we haven't already mentioned? This is at the end of the Ponderay Bay Trail, which is accessed from the city. The trail begins in the city of Sandpoint, and right now has no access from Ponderay.
No legal access.
No.
You can't.
That's a good point.
You can get there over the railroad tracks, and a lot of people do, but that's what they're trying to. One of the goals is to provide pedestrian access from Ponderay.
Yes, they'll be extending it kind of around the slag pile, Black Rock. Mm-hmm. Like we kind of touched on, they'll be taking out that soil and kind of wrapping it and then burying it. I believe they'll be moving it somewhere else. They won't be leaving it right there, but they'll be moving a lot of that contaminated soil that you talked about is mm-hmm. got lead in it, I believe is what they found. And that will be moved somewhere else, and they'll plant flowers on top of it and other things with healthy soil to encourage people not to go dig it up later. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, just really making that spot more safe, making sure that the lake can't access or degrade that soil that would put those chemicals in the lake and extend the Bay Trail. And it's part of Ponderay's really big vision for their front yard project, I believe it's called. They've got mm-hmm. that, and then you've got the underpass project all trying to provide and make Ponderay more of a destination.
Okay. Right. The front yard project, which is a big, ambitious, they're kind of their big outdoor recreation project that the city is focusing on right now.
Yeah, Pend'Oreille is a lakefront city that has never had lakefront access.
Cut off by the railroad.
Yeah, this amazing natural resource for it. One of the interesting things is they're planning to, you know, cap Black Rock, but apparently they're not just going to cap, they're going to wrap the sides as well, which they would need to do, I presume. And then they intend to texture it, so it's going to kind of look like the existing black slag. I mean, it's slag, but it looks like a rock.
Yeah. We'll see kind of what that looks like. But yes, that is the kind of their plan. Really, they felt that that is an important part of the Bay Trail in the community, is that people have come to know of it, and they didn't want to remove that community landmark or kind of take away from it. But they still want to make it safe so people can actually go and maybe look at it.
On top of it right now, it's a big flat area. I mean, you could have benches and stuff up on top with a little bit of a viewpoint down the lake. I don't know if you saw plans for what they're going to do on top of the rock.
It says here the cap is going to be dyed black and stamped like stone to try and keep the original look.
Yeah.
So it'll be a concrete cap, but it'll be,
But they could have some kind of recreational amenities on top of it.
Yeah. You could actually put something up there. That's interesting.
I don't believe that there are any plans to do that, but it could be something that maybe they look at in the future. I know that there's going to be more signage out there, kind of telling the story of Black Rock and the history of the
smelter that was there.
The smelter and the lake and a couple of things like that. And that was something that they were working on prior to this MOA with Sandpoint. Took a couple of months actually to get that signage all worked out. So we'll see kind of what that looks like, but it'll definitely be, you'll know when you come to that point, that it's a place of importance once it's complete.
So this is the remediation project, but the pedestrian, which is going to be an underpass to get there, that's a second phase or coming later.
Yeah. That's another part of the project.
Yeah.
Yes.
Farther down the road. Yeah.
Yeah. This is just for, making that area safe and extending the Bay Trail. And then they're still kind of working on moving forward with the underpass to make it fully connected to Pend'Oreille.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any kind of proposal. It looks like it's going to kind of maintain its status as sort of a trail, a walking trail. Haven't really seen anything proposing major like lake access for swimmers or boaters or anything
that. There's going to definitely be access for swimmers. They're going to have basically a beach area, but there's not going to be any vehicular access except for emergency vehicles if they need to get there.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if they're planning there is actually, or was for many years, a dock right in front of Black Rock. I don't know if it's still there actually. I don't know if they're planning to have something like a pier or a dock that gives people kind of more access out there.
Not that I'm aware of or that I've seen, but there could be.
Okay. Let's see. 8:30. Anything else in the paper this week that we didn't touch on, Jack? Anything coming up you'd like to call our attention to? How was your local news day?
It was really great. Always good to celebrate and cherish a thriving local news scene here. To have two publications in this tiny town is fantastic. So it was good to celebrate that. And as for in the paper, we're coming up on a couple of really special sections at the Daily Beast, so be on the lookout for those.
Your annual progress edition's coming up.
Annual progress edition. And then we'll be covering, next week is a very busy week for both the schools and the city. So if you're interested in either of those, I'll have every story that I can possibly think of, or that we have room to run in next week's edition.
And I saw yesterday at the Commerce Connection event. Are you got a story coming on that?
I don't believe so. Not quite yet, but that was good information for me as somebody who is not familiar with the Department of Commerce. It's good to see everything and maybe do some stories on what the Community Resource and Vision Center is trying to do.
That's a very ambitious project too. So the Commerce Connect was the a bunch of individuals, including the director of the Director Keeley of the Idaho Department of Commerce, were in town just to meet with people and create connections with our business community. It was sponsored in part by the Pondere Economic Partnership, mm-hmm. as well as the Boundary County EDC. Both those executive directors were there. Outreach to the state, which has a lot of influence about various things that happen here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll be back next Friday talking here on North Idaho News of the Week about everything going on in North Idaho. And Jack, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
We'll proceed with our music mix, starting with something by Bruce Coburn, Spring Song. Seems appropriate for the day and the weather. And thanks for listening.